Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Good Tuesday morning, everybody. This could be the day that Christie mania comes to an end. We just got word a little while ago that the governor of New Jersey will hold a news conference. Reading from Politico right now, it says Chris Christie, who hasn't addressed the press in New Jersey in over a week, just added a 1 p.m. press conference to his schedule. I mean, we don't know. He might be talking about the Transportation Trust Fund or something. This says his team has been, as always, impressively on message and closed-lipped about what his intentions are, and it's not clear who he's told in his circle about which way he's leaning on 2012, report Burns and Haberman on Politico. So we don't even know if this news conference at 1 o'clock is going to be the big one where he announces if, in fact, he is or isn't running for president in 2012, but it might be. So we plan to cover that at 1 o'clock today, and we plan to follow the leaks from the Christie camp as they come out this morning. We may know by the time our show ends today whether Chris Christie is running for president, and we're staying on top of it now, and we'll cover it at 1 o'clock. Meanwhile, here's how blogger Josh Brown characterized the overall mood yesterday in his industry. Faltering banks, confidence off the cliff, chronic joblessness, paralyzed politicians, slowing growth all over the world, crippling debt coming due at just the worst time, unquote. And that's the perspective from inside the financial community. The Occupy Wall Street protests continue today, just around the corner from the stock exchange. And meanwhile, while you weren't looking, yesterday was one of the worst days for the financial world in a long, long time. Believe it or not, the S&P 500 on October 3rd, 2011, yesterday, closed at exactly the same level it closed on October 3rd, 2008, 3 years ago to the day. Right at the heart of the crash in October 2008, the exact same S&P close, 1099.23. To the decimal point, 1099.23. Add to that news that Greece will not receive its latest round of bailouts for at least a month. Goldman Sachs and UBS downgrading their profit forecasts. And Deutsche Bank and Bank of America both announcing rounds of layoffs. So will the fear of Wall Street traders and the anger of Occupy Wall Street protesters merge? Is there any chance that these two sides are actually having the same conversation in some bizarre way? With us is Josh Brown, an investment advisor who writes the popular financial column Reformed Broker and wrote that blog post that we just read from. Also with us is Henry Blodgett, CEO and editor-in-chief of Business Insider. Hello, Josh. Hello, Henry. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hello. Thanks for having us.
How's it going, Brian?
Good. Thank you. So yesterday in the Times, a bank CEO was quoted as asking a reporter, is this Occupy Wall Street thing a big deal? We're trying to figure out how much we should be worried about all of this. Is this going to turn into a personal safety problem? So, Henry, what's the level of concern?
Well, I think that people are now realizing that the protesters aren't going to just up and go away, and their message certainly has been a little bit more focused in recent days. And then over the weekend, they had a spectacular publicity event when they effectively shut down traffic on the Brooklyn Bridge. And I think this woke a lot of people up to the fact that they're there. They've been there for 2 weeks. They're not going away. And clearly, in the United States and around the world, there is still huge pent-up outrage at the fact that Wall Street banks were bailed out, went right back to printing money and paying huge bonuses while Main Street got the shaft in the financial crisis. And I think you're now seeing that hit protests.
Josh, are you talking to traders? Are you hearing how this is actually playing on the floor in the rank and file offices on Wall Street? Do people want to, you know, are they worried about personal safety, as that one guy asked a reporter, or do they secretly want to climb out their office windows and join them?
You know, I think it's funny. It's tough to talk about Wall Street and think of it as a monolithic thing these days, because if you look at the headlines out of the major banks, they're laying off tens of thousands of people. So I talk to traders who aren't at all secure in their employment. So, you know, there is some sense that they're starting to have the same argument. There is some sense that the rage is going to come from within, not just from without. I haven't heard much on people being worried about personal safety, but there is definitely anger on both sides of the fence. not just from the streets.
It reminds me of the Occupy Wall Street protester the other day. I'm sure there was more than one who was carrying the sign. I'm trying to remember the exact wording.
Will work for commission?
Well, no, that's a good one. But the protester from Occupy Wall Street who was carrying a sign that said, preserve NYPD pensions. Right, while the cops were surrounding them. Right. So maybe the thing is stop Wall Street layoffs
right.
is the next Occupy Wall Street mantra. But listeners, seriously, if there's anyone from within the financial services community listening, give us a call and tell us about any conversations you've been a part of regarding Occupy Wall Street. Current Wall Street employees, especially encouraged to apply. Former traders, you're having this conversation among yourselves. It doesn't have to be just traders. Obviously, there are many jobs in the sector. We know that. So let's get the Wall Street perspective on Occupy Wall Street, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. We would love to have your voices in on this mix today. And funny enough, this might be one of the few instances where the voices of those who work on Wall Street are actually underrepresented in the media. 212-433-9692 or post to our webpage at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Henry Blodgett, do you think the Occupy Wall Street message is resonating differently with traders on the floor as opposed to executives and CEOs in the suites?
Well, I think that anybody who is exposed to potential layoffs, as Josh mentioned, certainly would probably feel extra frustration at the fact that they are effectively being lumped in with the whole bailout culture and the decisions that were made that got to the banks to the brink of collapse where the government had to step in. I mean, again, I think that the big issue here is that when the government decided to step in 2008 and 2009 and bail out Wall Street, there are lots of ideas about how to do that. And unfortunately, the idea and the way that they went with was to basically preserve the status quo. And I think that that is the hardest thing to explain to mainstream America, which is that, yes, the banks played a huge role in getting us to the edge of the precipice, but we had no choice but to preserve the status quo, too big to fail still exists, and so forth. And there are other options where they could have gone in and completely restructured everything that would have made it clear that the problem had been dealt with and the folks who got us into the issue actually had been dispatched and so forth. And I just don't think we did that. And I think that that's part of why there's still such frustration.
Josh, you want to pick up the conversation right there?
I would say that what's notable about Occupy Wall Street as a movement is that it's completely amorphous. They haven't hamstrung themselves by making any serious list of specific demands. And because they've avoided doing that, it gives them a longer period of time to pick up members to keep rolling downhill and get bigger. Had they said, these are our politics, they might have alienated some of the people that are now coming to join. So they've been very ambiguous. I think it's a smart decision if they want this thing to really mean something. Unfortunately, by remaining ambiguous, they can't, you know, no primal scream is going to turn into anything that actually affects policy. So at a certain point, the grown-ups, either from within the movement or politicians who want to kind of glom onto it, at a certain point, someone's going to have to lay out some kind of guidelines as far as what they stand for and some kind of aim that they hope to achieve. Otherwise, it'll fizzle. But for right now, I think they've made the right decision. There's a lot of uneducated people down there. They don't necessarily know what was done to them, but they know something was, and they know they have a reason to be angry. So far, they haven't really made an announcement as far as why.
John, who works at Goldman Sachs, you're on WNYC. John, we really appreciate you calling in.
Yes, good morning, Brian. You know, it's interesting. We have been speaking about this because we've seen this, you know, the protesters down in the area, and we've seen the signs. And I think also from what we're seeing is the administration, the present presidential administration, has basically skewed this argument towards Wall Street being the only culpable characters. In reality, you know, there was the Angelides report that came out a few years ago that put all the blame on Wall Street, but nothing was ever mentioned how the whole subprime debacle occurred with, you know, with HUD and Cuomo at the time. In addition, you know, we know these things. We know that also some bad decisions were made when those subprime mortgages were turned into the vehicles that they were, that completely, it was a straw that broke the camel's back. But this began years ago under Clinton, when they got rid of Glass-Steagall and the uptick rule on the derivatives. And, you know, it's, and of course the Bush administration did absolutely nothing. They had 8 years to fix this if they thought things were so wrong, but they pushed it along. So what we're seeing here is
right, but you're talking into, I'm sure, but you're talking in terms of which political party to blame, but you're also saying that Wall Street captured both political parties in terms of getting these kinds of, you know, unleashing policies through under Clinton and under Bush. And now the Occupy Wall Street rage is turning on Wall Street itself, which it says is the root of this evil.
Right. And they blame that as the root cause. But let's take a few steps back. It was basically social engineering on a bureaucratic point. So they thought they were going to get something out of this. Then Wall Street came in and
you mean to make more mortgages available to more poorer people?
Right, who couldn't handle those mortgages.
Brian, this is Josh. The people in the park right now are not angry about the housing bubble and the social engineering that caused it. I think we're totally missing what this primal scream is really about. The people are angry about the actions that were taken after the fact. The fact that in 2009, 2010, bonuses went back to near record levels when nothing was fixed. They see that almost no one was fired. They see that the rules have barely changed. And they see that from the outside looking in, it's almost back to business as usual. The restaurants are packed. The luxury retailers are packed. And that big difference in their lives has not been reflected in the lives of what they view as the bankers that basically got off scot-free.
Uh-huh.
So, that's what the rage is.
So, John from Goldman, you want to come back one more time on that?
Yeah, basically, I got to tell you, when they talk about these bankers making the huge money, there are those that make huge money. But there's also the guys in the mailroom, the guys in the print shops, the guys plugging in cables that are only making $50,000, $40,000 a year. And their bonuses are $2,000, $5,000, what you would get at a normal Fortune 500 company. And then you've got the CEOs that are making the $40 million, the $100 million. And so, you know, anger needs to be pointed at the right direction. But those of us that are in the trenches, that are the quantitative analysts, that are in the risk management, we're not making that kind of money.
John, thank you for your call. I really appreciate you.
Thank you, Brian.
Sharing your voice. Henry Blodgett from Business Insider, you want to say something before we move on to another caller?
So I think both Josh and John just made very good points. I think one issue that's coming out of this, though, is that right now we are headed right back into a crisis with the banks. The European banks are starting to implode. If you look at the stocks of the U.S. banks, they are suddenly hitting levels that is almost right at the depths of the crisis in 2008. And this is happening at the exact time that the Main Street rage against the bailouts is resulting in huge protests. And so what does that mean? Well, partially it means that the government is in a real pickle here if the bank stocks continue to collapse about what they can do. Because I think if the idea were floated that there were going to be another bailout, you would have 50 million Americans march on Washington with torches and pitchforks. And so what can the government do if this continues now? You know, this may ultimately be more than a backward-looking, we're mad about what happened in 2008, which is certainly just justifiable, but what do we do now in 2011?
We're talking about the reaction on Wall Street to Occupy Wall Street with Josh Brown, an investment advisor who writes the popular financial column Reformed Broker, and Henry Blodgett, CEO and editor-in-chief of Business Insider, and with you at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, if you work on the street especially. Lorne in New Rochelle, you're on WNYC. Thanks a lot for your call.
Well, thank you, Brian. I love your show, as usual. What I wanted to mention was it's kind of a reflection on the misunderstanding of the people that don't really know Wall Street. There was a caller before who mentioned the people in the mail room, the analysts and whatnot, and they're not making the kind of money that is being reported all the time. There's a very small percentage of the population of Wall Street, maybe 140,000 people, that actually make that kind of money and give Wall Street a bad name because they run out and buy Maseratis and Porsches and large properties in the Hamptons, et cetera, et cetera. But ultimately, I'm former Wall Street. I was there for 11 years as an investment banker. So we struggled every day to make a living. But ultimately, it is a business, just like any other industry, that is trying to see its way through a lot of legislation to try to penalize people, put them in jail as scapegoats, because a lot of the instruments that were created to make money without any foresight or hindsight about how it's going to affect the economy or anybody on Main Street. And that wasn't illegal per se. What it might have been inappropriate, it might have been some other form of...
Well, that's part of what has people so enraged, that some of these things that helped crash the economy, at least arguably, were not illegal.
Right, but the whole point is that the prosecutors are obviously looking for a scapegoat too, because that's how they, in effect, run their business. The more people they throw in jail, the higher profile they get, and then they can get jobs in private law firms making hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. So we know that's true too. But rather than throw people in jail simply as scapegoats, we have to look at how these financial securities were created. And that's the legislation we have to consider. Mm-hmm. But the government is not going to figure that out because they don't even understand what these instruments are. The people that were buying these instruments didn't understand what they were, because the person at Goldman Sachs who's very sophisticated, who is a debt security analyst, will be able to sell something to an individual or a fund or otherwise who's looking for a higher return, and that's ultimately how it goes. Now, if we look at the housing crisis, that's a different story. I mean, people were basically being thrown into mortgages that were effectively illegal because people couldn't afford them, and the selling pressures were extremely high, and the fees were coming in from all over the place, and people were sticking their hands in everybody's pocket to get paid. That's true of Wall Street, too.
So,
it illegal?
So, Josh, do you want to come back in on this? Because I think maybe it comes to your point from earlier that the problem is the protesters feel that these structural problems have not been addressed for the future.
Yeah, there's an investment bank. There's an investment banking practice. Forget about a product. A practice called Repo 105 that was abused by Lehman Brothers quarter after quarter, where they hid $50 billion in loans that they didn't want to display come time to report earnings off balance sheet, and then move them back after reporting the quarter. That's illegal. It's not illegal. It's an actual illegal practice. You can count the number of people that were arrested or got in trouble for that on one hand, and you'd have all five fingers left.
So there may still have been prosecutable deception in and around.
Fraud.
Yeah.
Fraud. And it's not been prosecuted. And not only has it not been prosecuted, there's been no disgorgement. Everyone's got their money. Some people are living out in the Hamptons. Some people are here in Manhattan still registered with FINRA. Dick Fuld actually has a securities license. It's completely out of control.
From
and that's
Lehman
what
Brothers.
The people, they're not mad about the housing crisis. They're mad about the aftermath and why they've been punished because of what happened to the economy. But the people that were in the center of it all are living life just as they had been before.
Lauren, you want one more go here for 30 seconds?
Well, I agree in part to what was responded, but from my perspective, rather than throwing, let's say, a whole cadre of people, Lehman Brothers is out of business, Bear Stearns is out of business, and any number of thousands of other people are no longer working on Wall Street because of what happened. But the people who actually did the fraud that is being discussed should be the ones that should be prosecuted, not the whole crew. That's my issue.
I'm not looking for a paddy wagon to pull up in front of Barclays and pull ex-Lehman guys out. You're talking about a CEO and a CFO that, after Sarbanes-Oxley, by law, had to sign off on their quarterly results. That was one of the provisions that we had put in place after Enron, after WorldCom. We said we're not going to see this kind of off-balance sheet, lying, cheating, stealing ever again. For the next 5 or 6 years, it continued, and now we're not even punishing people for laws that we had on the books, let alone any new kind of law. So this is not about arresting 10,000 people. This is about, here are people that got rich to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars, and they are going about their lives as though nothing ever happened. You look at the people down in the square. For them, something major has happened. They've been unable to get loans, to go to school, to go to work, on and on and on and on.
Lauren, just as an asterisk, I know people are reacting to how you characterized investment bankers before as struggling to make a living. Was that and now Henry, I think, is laughing. Do you stand by that use of language?
The difference is that Henry was an elite analyst, and I respect his analytical skills and his intellect. But Wall Street isn't made up of five investment banks. Morgan Stanley, J.P. Morgan Chase, et cetera, et cetera. These are large elite investment banks. But there are tens of thousands of other individuals who are When I say struggling to make a living, they're not making $500,000 a year. They might be making $150,000, $200,000, which for the average individual in the United States is a lot of money. There's no question about it. But if you're living on the Upper East Side or Upper West Side and you play the game,
right,
that's not a lot of money. That's
and you're working 80 stressful hours a week and
or
taking
more,
home $150,000. Lauren, thank you. I really, really appreciate your call. I want to get one Occupy Wall Street voice in here who wants, I think, to bond with the bond traders. Brendan in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi, how are you? Good morning.
What's up?
I am at Occupy Wall Street. I man the media center. I am the security there, and I'm also kind of a spokesperson in the media. I've been on ABC and the other main news programs.
When we're done with your call, Brendan, so I don't forget to say it later, can we get your contact off the air?
Yes, sir.
Good.
Yes, sir.
Great. And so what'd you call in to say right now?
I'm calling to say that I have called a meeting, not a General Assembly meeting, but a meeting at the Media Center at 2 o'clock, because what I want to have happen is I want this type of conversation to happen in the park. Anyone who comes in the park will be protected, and it's all very peaceful there. Everyone's acting with respect. But the thing is that I need to speak to someone at Wall Street so we can get on point about exactly what you're talking about, because this is an amorphous problem. Everything you guys are talking about is right. It's every house of economy. It's not about one thing. It's not about punishing one guy. It's about a system, and it has to eventually penetrate a legislative process. So what I have to have happen is people who know what they're talking about come down to the media center, speak to me personally, so we can have an organized meeting there with the different groups that I represent there, which run this protest, so I can have a General Assembly meeting later, because tomorrow there'll be a march, and hopefully there'll be some trade unions showing up, which will give us some beef and some legitimacy with working-class Americans, and we can unite all these houses together.
I know tomorrow's a big march on this in Washington, and of course we'll be covering it, but your message right now is, like for our first caller, John from Goldman Sachs, come downstairs, have a Brian Lehrer Show style dialogue, even though I won't be there, at 2 o'clock with you and other Occupy Wall Street protesters today, and you'd like that kind of scene to take place, right?
Yes, but I would like to reiterate that it's not going to be like a mob discussion. It's going to be a discussion in order to fine-tune the message so that it's not a mob that goes on for 3 weeks and it dissipates. It needs to focus, and it needs to get on point about how we guide this to real legislative process.
What would be the upside for a current Wall Street senior level employee to actually come down and dialogue with you guys, given that there aren't any specific demands made so far? What would be the positive for Wall Street to get involved?
The positive it would be to demonstrate that it is not about people against people. Most of my speeches down there are about it's not an anti-cop rally. It's not squatters against yuppies like the 80s. It is about a system, and it is about changing that system. So we're just Americans that work. Everyone out here is working, and these are educated kids. They're sweet. They're respectful. They're media savvy. They have degrees. This is not Tompkins Square Park. This is different. So it's not going to just dissipate and become like, you know, cops coming in and hitting everyone over the head. So what we need, and I've spoken to commanders, and they are agreeable so far as long as we keep it on the up and up. The thing right now that I would like to see is the upside of the Wall Street involvement is that we're not angry at people that wear white collars. They're people, too. They have bills. It doesn't matter how rich you are. Somehow you're getting worked. So it's not about rich, poor. It's not a class war. It's not a race war. It's none of this fashionable stuff. What it really is about getting stuff changed so that we're not like, you know, there's no blood in anyone's mouth.
And
it's respectful.
Brendan, you get the last word in this segment for now, but hang on, because my producer wants to get your contact information off the air so he can stay in close touch with you and the other organizers, all right?
Thank you, sir.
So hang on. And we thank Josh Brown, investment advisor who writes the popular financial column Reformed Broker, and Henry Blodgett, editor-in-chief of Business Insider. Thank you both so much for a great conversation.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you.
And thanks to those of you from Wall Street who called, as well as from Occupy Wall Street. Obviously, we will keep covering this. We'll get Howard Schultz's reaction to it in a little while, the CEO of Starbucks. who's getting very political these days. And coming up in a minute, we'll go to Ben Smith from Politico very briefly, because we've heard now that Chris Christie is going to have a news conference at 1 o'clock today. So we may actually be about to learn whether the New Jersey governor is going to run for president. So stay tuned. Ben Smith, then Starbucks CEO Howard Schultz.